Okay, so today I changed my mind a little bit about how we're going to finish things off. I did want to do a high-level introduction of Keynes' method, Hamilton's method, that kind of thing, maybe variational methods, just some really high level. These are the things that exist. We may still be, probably still will do a little bit of that on Thursday, but given how the last midterm went, I thought worthwhile us getting some more depth in Lagrange's method. So hopefully help you guys out on the final for that. So today we're going to work a few problems using the Lagrange method for constrained systems with constrained coordinates. We're going to do one where we kind of explicitly consider the constraint forces and the work, the virtual work that they're doing, and then two more where we use Lagrange multipliers to set up the problem. All right. So the first one we're going to work is an example from your book. It's example 8.3. And I'll draw it, and then we can talk about what the system looks like and how we need to proceed. Okay. Draw. So I have a gap here indicating that goes off kind of to infinity, but it's a bar that's fixed. It's a capital F, sorry. To match the book. A R theta B, no slipping. And so okay. So we have a yoke on a horizontal slider, so it's constrained to move horizontally. Inside that yoke attaches to a kind of point on the disc B, there is friction internal to this yoke. So that's what's going to force us into having to use constrained coordinates. So if there's no friction, we can get away with using unconstrained coordinates. There's always horizontal force acting on the yoke. We have no slipping with the ground. The coefficient of friction in the yoke is mu. Okay, and then we have masses. This guy is M1. And the disc is M2 over there to keep it out of the way. Okay. So basically the problem is asking what are the equations of motion for the system? So we have kind of a force input. We're pulling on the yoke this way. What are the equations of motion describing how the system moves? So where do we start?
Frames.
Some frames might be helpful, sure. What do you want to pick? So it's easy to describe X. Sure. Let's just maybe say there's a fixed frame, cap X, cap Y. Necessarily need to say where the origin's at right now. Doesn't generally matter a lot of times. And it may would be useful to describe some kind of, maybe some kind of frame attached to this guy and rolling with the disk or something. But I think given really we have just kind of this theta to describe, we're not in 3D, we probably can get away with just working in the fixed frame for the most part. Because right, we're only going to have one rotation to get to that vector anyway. So we probably can just stay cap XY in a fixed Newtonian frame. All right. What else? Pick some generalized coordinates. Sure. What should we pick here? X and theta. That's given we're kind of working like constrained and kind of prefixed by saying we're working on a constrained set of generalized coordinates. Yes. In general, how many degrees of freedom does this system have? Only one. Right. So if we're picking X and theta, we have now two generalized coordinates. That is, by definition, a constrained set then. And we're saying, hey, we're going to need that to figure out what this frictional force is anyway. Okay. Otherwise, that frictional force is internal and we don't have to worry about it. And I think I actually did work a version of this problem. I forgot to look up exactly what example or exercise it was in Chapter 7, where there is no friction there. So you might want to try to find that. I'm pretty sure it's there. So, sure, we're going to pick. Let's put it in the order that the book does in his solution. So he puts theta first. All right. What's next? Yeah, some free body diagram. It's always a good way to go. We have two bodies to worry about. Our yoke, and then we have the circle. Okay. What kind of forces do we have? We would have gravity on each. Let's say we can ignore that. We're always horizontal, so that gravity's not doing any work. We can get rid of it. It's not going to show up. All right, we set our datum, and it's the heights never change. External force F, for sure.
What is the normal and friction for the circle?
Where at?
At the circle.
Okay. So let's call that N1 and F1. What else do we have? Yeah, so we have some forces here at the pin B. Right. So that interaction we have, right, if we can imagine this guy going this way, there's some force that's wanting to pull the pin that way, right? So if it's pulling that way, it's pulling back on this guy, wherever that equal and opposite, right? And then what else is there? Yeah, the frictional force. And we'll draw that. Let's call that F2 there, and we'll draw it down. Equal and opposite. Okay. F2 into anything else? Say no. We got two votes for no.
Could you put a moment or something on the vertical buttons that can't rotate in that direction?
The yoke, you mean?
Yeah.
So there's some kind of constraint force there. I agree with that, but I'm just going to say there's some normal force that keeps that guy on the bar, actually. It can't come through the bar or go above the bar. There's something that's keeping it in X. All right. So what do we need to do next? We can go to the energy, sure. Let me actually did a step before that, but we could get there pretty easily. All right. Kinetic energy for the system. What do we have? Mm-hmm. M1. Yeah, what's that in this case?
Oh, it's
yeah. So that's the yoke. So we can kind of put parentheses around that if we want to kind of break out what they're. How about for the. We have two bodies right now. We need potential for the disk. Well, let's talk about it more generally. There's one half we know. Okay. Sure, it's not in pure rotation, right? So, where are we at? So I have some rotational energy there. What else do we have for that disk? Yeah, translational energy. Translational, what velocity do we need for that?
VA,
right? It's the center of mass here. Right, we're saying that disk is uniform. Right, so we have... translational velocity of the center of mass plus rotational energy about that center of mass. And then that yoke was just in pure translation, so we only have the translational term. Okay. What is VA? So we could one half, that's M2. And we can collect terms if we want. Maybe save, make some arithmetic easier later on. All right, there's our kinetic energy, total kinetic energy for the system. How about potential?
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so let's think about that. Let's think about what's going to happen if we do that. Right. So we put the datum at A. So this sphere, its height's then zero, right? Right, the circle. Okay, maybe there's some kind of center of mass up here. So it's going to be a fixed distance. When we go to take some kind of derivative of that, which we need to do for the Lagrangian, what happens to it?
Zero.
It goes away. Right. So really, because neither one of those guys is changing height, there's no effect of gravity on the system, basically. There's no change in potential, which is really what we're getting at when we're formulating that potential energy term. So our Lagrangian then is just that kinetic energy term we found. Okay. All right. So I have the Lagrangian. What else do we need to know?
Velocity
of point B for what reason?
To get your work done by the friction and normal forces.
Yep, so I'm going to need the velocity of point B, which is going to give me the virtual displacement of point B, which is then going to give me the virtual work done by the friction F2 and N2. Sure. Okay. What else does the velocity of point B give me in this case? Here's your hint, I have a set of constrained coordinates. Does the velocity of point B relate x and theta in this case? Right, so I can write the velocity of point B kind of just, it's just x dot I, but it's also velocity of A plus the rotation cross, right? So the velocity of B is going to get us both to the virtual displacements of point B so that we can get our generalized forces. It's also going to get us to what our constraint equation needs to be. Okay. So let's look at that. Let's see. Which way do we want to do it first? Let's look at it from the constraint perspective first. But to do either, we just need to write the velocity first. So velocity of point B. Right, if I'm writing it, it's kind of always in this yoke, right? So that point B is always moving just in the I direction, right? It's always contained exactly within the yoke, moving that way. So that is the I. We could also write the velocity of B. So we already found the velocity of A, so our theta dot. What is the omega here?
Minus theta dot k.
Yeah. And what is position of B with respect to A? Yeah, it's actually not r, it's the little eta. And we said, what was cosine first? No, sine theta, right. You got it right. So we can then write that ends up objective terms already. Let's do that too. Match my notes. Right. So then what do we know? What can we write? Well, what does this term have to equal?
Zero.
But it's only got theta in it, so it doesn't really give us a whole lot of more information about what the relationship between our two constrained coordinates is. Right. How about this other term? If I match up the components, I know then that x dot missing a minus sign somewhere. Am I? Nope, I'm not. X dot equals so there I have a relationship now between my two generalized coordinates. Okay. What kind of form do I want to write these velocity constraints in? Want I want it in a form like this, right? That's the form I want it in, because what that lets me do when I do that. Is then say, well, hey, theta, comma, comma. I know those Jacobian constraint coefficients. I'm just matching up terms there. So I've set up my constraint. Also keep in mind, we'll see this, we'll reiterate this point later, but this, when you're actually coming to solve, this is part of the system of equations that represent the equations of motion for this system. Have to include that constraint equation. All right. So we are also looking at this guy. If VB is that, then delta RB must be so we took our velocity at point B, replaced all the time derivatives with virtual displacements. Okay. And remind me, why were we doing that?
So we can get to
virtual work. Virtual work done by normal and friction forces at point P. Sure. Okay. So let's write our expression for virtual work then. What do we have?
So it would be the friction and the normal. So does the pin? ends slide up and down in the...
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, yeah. So, it'd be all of our forces dotted with the virtual displacement. So, the friction and the normal at the...
At point B?
At point B.
Okay.
And then we also have virtual work being done by big force F.
Mm-hmm.
So, it'd be... dot velocity of or virtual displacement of the whole
okay.
bar.
Okay, I think we're mostly on the right track. You guys have these forces, right? And you're saying these guys are doing virtual work. What are they doing virtual work on? We have two different bodies. Where are those forces acting? Okay, at the point where they meet, that's right. But if that happens, what on which body do they act?
They work on both, so we have to have two equations.
Yeah. So these guys are doing, these constraint forces in this case, are doing virtual work on both bodies. So you have to include both in your formulation of virtual work. Right? And you can think about that. I need to do all the virtual work for everything that's acting on this body in my virtual work for everything that's acting on this body. That's another way to kind of think at, about these guys are doing work on both bodies. All right. So let's start with maybe the disk. So those are the, we have that for the disk. And what do we have for the other guy? What's the virtual displacement of this guy?
Just X.
Yeah, just in the X direction, right. So we can also write, maybe we can call it dr yoke. Right, and we know that's basically just, oops, delta. Does it mean that, right? This guy only displaces that way. So what forces do we have on him? So we have minus N2 in the I. Well, let's put the F minus N2 in the I. And we have that's F2 in the J. Okay. Anything else? N3. Do I need to include N3 here? Well, one, even if I do, right, it's not doing any work. Right? This guy is constrained to move horizontally. So a virtual displacement in this guy, that N3, is a constraint force. It doesn't do any work. Right, any virtual work. So we don't have to include it. How about N1 and F1? Right, so if this is a no-slipping condition, right, these guys are just constraint forces. They're not doing any work either. So we have everything we need. To write those guys. Let's see. Right. I will write these guys real quick. I'd like to just, we're almost we can kind of completely, more or less completely finish this problem, and then we'll leave the math for the second two. So let me... That's the expression we get for our virtual work, which we know should be which for us is Q1. We just have two. So that means, of course, then that the coefficient multiplying work to displacement theta is Q1. Coefficient multiplying that guy is Q2. All right, so we have our Lagrangian, we have our internalized forces, we have our constraint coefficients, if we need them, ready to go. What's next? Yeah, just solve Lagrange's equation for Q1 and Q2. Okay. Let's see. Kind of running into space here, maybe. Can I get rid of the top half here? That. So for Q1 equals theta, right, we have the total time derivative of the partial with respect to theta dot. And what we end up with there, if we do that math, M2. Equals, I'll just write Q1. Since it's still up over there, save us a little bit of writing. That. Right. Right, and we can write out this guy. In that case, we end up with should be M1. That guy should be M1, right?
Yeah.
And that's not an M2. That's an N2. Okay. So we have now two equations of motion. You notice, however, our Q1 has F2. Can we say anything about F2 beyond what we have here? What do we know about friction forces? Or what do we often assume about friction forces that works out to be pretty close to the truth most of the time?
The coefficient of friction.
coefficient of friction times the normal, and what kind of, where do you get the normal direction from?
I think the normal in this case would be in 3, or wait,
N2. Yeah, it's N2. Yeah. Right, because this is the normal, right? So we know that that F2 is the coefficient of friction, which we said, and you times the magnitude of that normal force. And then where do we get the direction from, though? Right. So we usually will say, hey, it's actually the sine. In our case, it's going to be always in that direction. It's always opposing VB. Okay. We can figure that out pretty easily, right? Dot product is just that. And, well, those two minus signs cancel. That's a plus. And the actual distance here doesn't really matter because it's always a constant, right? So we could get rid of that if we wanted. So we have an expression for F2 that kind of simplifies further. We can eliminate F2 from that Q1 equation. We know it solely based on theta, theta dot. And we could do a couple other things to simplify further. You end up with a more complex expression, but fewer number of equations if you wanted to go that route. So what we end up with for our two-degree freedom system, we have the two second-order differential equations describing the motion and the constraint equation, which we have to include in our solution as well. So this is an example of kind of explicitly including the work that those constraint forces do. Questions about that one?
Do we not need to describe F in terms of, like, big F in terms of X and theta? Like, doing the, like, Newtonian F equals MA?
Well, we have that here. We got the virtual work it does. Which, if you kind of look at these equations, does it make sense that that capital F only shows up in this equation? Yeah, it does. Right? It's acting directly on the yoke. It's acting directly in the direction of that generalized coordinate.
Okay.
And 2 is always opposing. So that equation makes some sense. And you can look at this guy. Okay, these are the basically the moments that these two guys are creating at B, causing that to turn. Right, so you can reason about these equations. Yeah, may seem to make sense. Which, again, I always encourage you to do, to make that check.
So I get that we needed VB explicitly defined like that, as x dot minus their box to the right.
Mm-hmm.
But in our final answer, will we write that as an equation, or is it just information on the way there?
This guy?
Yes.
This constraint is needed for the solution.
Right, it's needed, but it's just box in 1 and 2.
No, it's part of the equations of motion. Right. Because this, all three of these things have to be true at the same time, at every instant in time. So it's part of the set of equations that describe the motion of the system. Other questions? All right, let's try another one. This is exercise 8.5. And I'll draw the system and kind of what we have going on. Good. Both of these guys are L long, and they both have mass M. All right. We have a torque at the pure torque at the upper pin there, and we have a force down here, which we'll talk about in some more detail in just a second, that we're going to call capital F. We're going to call those three kind of points on the A, B, and then the end point, C. And what the problem says is that, hey, this F, F always acts in a way such that VC is parallel to link AB, basically. So this F is enforcing this condition. The velocity point C is always parallel to link AB. Okay. Equal mass. And basically the book in this case expressly tells you, hey, use Lagrange multipliers. To get the equations of motion. All right. Where do we start?
Let's pick some frames.
Pick some frames, sure. What are we going to pick?
Probably one at A, just like mm-hmm. straight up and straight to the side.
So I can... Yeah, so I could do an XY. And this is one where I could pick Y vertical, Y down. I'm going to pick Y down, because that's what I did in the notes. Y vertical would work just as well.
We need to do one along AB.
So I can have one along AB. And if I do it this way, it's probably something like, or origin could be back there, I guess. Is that where you wanted the origin, back at A? Okay. So that would be Y1. Call that X1. And then maybe you want to do the same thing for the second link. All right. And we'll center this one here. X2. Okay. Sure, those seem relatively useful. What else? Pick some generalized coordinates, sure. What do we want to choose?
Could you get those two angles of those two bars?
Yeah, I think that's what I would choose. So let's call that one theta 1. And how I measure this, that's a choice you get to make too. I'm going to say, hey, let's measure this from vertical. And of course, you could measure it from the, you know, from Y1 to Y2, things like that. This is going to make routing some of our energy stuff a little bit easier, right? Because now that theta 2 just gives us the whole rotation. So then if I'm choosing that, then, well, that kind of dictates that's probably what we want to do here. Those two angles give us all the information we need to place this system. Okay. What else? What's next? Free body diagram. I think we have enough space here. I'm just going to draw this guy right here. So what, we have gravity on this guy, right? We have gravity on the upper link as well, the center of that guy. G. Okay. What else do we have? Well, we have the applied force there, right? We have some kind of constraints at, or some kind of reaction forces at the pin, right? So maybe something like that. Two guys there. I'm not going to name them. And we could also draw some reactions here, right? And they're going to act on both bodies. Okay. I'm not going to do that. Why would I not need to do that?
Because we're doing Lagrange.
We're doing Lagrange, and those internal reactions don't show up. They don't actually do any work. All right. That said, it's not a bad habit to be in of drawing a complete full free body diagram. Okay. So, let's think about F for a second. We have this kind of applied force out here, F. But we said, hey, this F is actually enforcing some kind of constraint. What does that make F? A constraint force, right. There you go. So we're actually going to treat it that way. Breaking out all the colors today. All right. So what do we need to do now? I could do energies, sure. We could do those first. Okay. So if I want to write, we can start over here to save some space. Kinetic energy of this system, what do we have?
So for AB, it would be IZZ, or 1/2 IZZ theta dot squared.
And that's all I need for the top link. Why? It's in pure rotation about A. Okay, and we're going to say IZZ1 is the ZZ moment of inertia of link 1, kind of. Maybe the shorthand we'll use. Okay, so that's link 1. What do I have for the lower one?
So we also have this rotational.
Mm-hmm. And I need translational of what point?
The center of mass.
Right. And let's call that G. And we can go up here and say, well, let's call this point G. So let's leave that, we can write VG, I guess. Let me see what I want to do with that. Right, so this upper link, he's in pure rotation. Right, so we can write, this is IZZ That's the moment of inertia about point A, actually. It's a terrible M. So that's the moment of inertia of this upper link about A. Right. This guy, I can't do an M. It's not in pure rotation, right? It's translating as well as rotating. So we need both a rotational component and the translational component for the lower link. We could do this for this upper link too. We could write IZZ. We could write this about kind of G1 if you wanted. Do theta 1. And then take the translational velocity of that, and you're actually going to end up with this. All right. So we have, let's just leave the BG as BG for right now, the velocity of that G. We'll come back to that in just a second. We need it for some other stuff. But we'll leave, get all the energies written in general form if we can. So potential energy, what kind of potential do I have here?
Gravity.
Just gravity, which means I need to do what? Some kind of gravity datum, which, what's a good point here?
A.
A, point A, good. So, hey, that's gravity datum. So that means that gravitational potential from link one is what? Mg.
Yeah.
Okay. So the height above the datum, we're actually below, so we get a negative sign, and it's L over 2 cosine theta 1. Okay. What's the gravitational potential of the second bar? There's our potential energy. And across our Lagrangians is just T minus V. All right. What's next? Lagrangian. A couple other things we need. Virtual work. So, in this case, virtual work is what? Well, check our purple here. Purple's telling us, hey, we're gonna treat this as a constraint force, and then we're going to do that for a few reasons. We don't know actually what direction this guy is acting in order to enforce that constraint. Right, so it's drawn here kind of perpendicular to that bar, but it's not dictated that that's that. So there's some difficulty in dealing with that, really, right? Which is why it's a good problem to use Lagrange multipliers. Because then it just kind of, if we have that constraint equation, it kind of comes out in the wash for us. So if we're treating this as a constraint for us, it doesn't show up. Just M. So what is M?
Minus M.
Right. Yeah. Short. M minus M. Just assign my notes. Theta, so that gives us
Theta 1.
Our generalized forces. These guys don't show up. They don't do any work up here. And these are kind of internal constraint forces that we're not really concerned with. They don't show up either. They're not doing any virtual work. All right. So now really what's left is dealing with F. Right. So how do we do that? Yeah, so we have to set up with that. If this constraint force is enforcing some kind of constraint, we need to be able to write that constraint in kind of our standard form. And that's what's going to allow us to set up these Lagrange multipliers. So we have to figure out how to write this in our standard form, right? So the constraint is saying, right, EC is some kind of magnitude in the direction of B to A, right? Yeah. Relative to A. Maybe that's one way we could write it if we figure that out. What else does this... How else can we maybe write that equation? Write that constraint. How about this? Is it the same as our constraint? I see some nods. Yes. Right. If this is zero, right, there are no components in this in these guys that are parallel, that are perpendicular to one another. Right. So there are no components perpendicular. They're parallel. Right. So if we can write our equation, this is kind of starting to set up like something we might want. It's something equal to zero, which is kind of how we want to get our the form of our constraint equations. So then we have to write VC. Let's start with that guy. Okay, VC is what? Coming off what? Yeah, so this basically you can think about it as a, the lower link, right? So I'm going to call that omega 2. Cross with what? RC relative to B. All right. So let's look at the terms of this guy. What's VB? Okay. Follows the same form, right? VA. What's the velocity of A?
Zero.
All right, so let's work through the other terms we have left. It's omega 1.
Theta 1 dot,
yes. X cross Y, yes, minus. And the K direction, right? B relative to A.
L J1.
Yeah, so you can write it LJ1. We're going to want to get it into the cap theta, probably. So we can see that J1 vector is what's that? Theta 1. Right. So that can get us to VB. Okay. What's omega 2? Okay. So that could we could write that, of course, L and the A2.
Why would you include the theta 1?
Because this is measured from a vertical. This is right. That's the advantage of doing it this rather than measuring. If you were doing this guy, theta 2 was just that angle, then you need both. So we can write it that way too. Okay. And then we have everything we need to write BC. We know BA, we can write BC cross RBA is 0. Okay. When you collect like terms, you end up with something that looks like this. And I have the intermediate steps in the notes for you. But you end up with a constraint after some math. Ends up just being that. Okay, so how do I get my Jacobian constraint coefficients? Yeah, I just need to match those guys up, right? So remember, we're matching up. So for us, Q1's theta 1, so A11 then is just 1. It's just that. And then B1, we don't have any. It's just 0. So now I'm ready basically to write my Lagrange's equation, and I'll just write the general form. Have that. So then we have basically everything we need to plug in. You get equations of motion for this system using Lagrange multipliers. So basically this, you can think of this, these two terms are taking care of the contribution of F that enforces this constraint. That is the Lagrange multiplier.
Oh.
So that's what I mean. Like, you can effectively think about that as the part of that constraint force that is actually acting on that generalized coordinate in order to enforce the constraint.
Why are they both lambda 1?
Because it is your first Lagrange multiplier. It's the coefficient that changes. So just like, if you think about this F, If this was a fixed direction, it's going to have some component that's acting on theta 1 and some component that's acting on theta 2, but the F magnitude is the same. There's one way to think about that, maybe. Just the contribution to the two the generalized coordinates is what's changing, which that's dictated by this coefficient. Yeah, it's kind of, you can kind of think of it, it's not quite right, but you can kind of think about, it's just a way to write how that constraint force is acting on each generalized coordinate. And I have a lot more of the immediate steps here, too, of this problem for you to check out. questions about that one? At least I think we have time to set up at least the last one. And I'll post the full notes. Another exercise from your book. This guy is 8.10, and I know it's relevant for at least one person in the room. We have, in this case, a boat. All right, it has a single thrust at the back, centered at the back. It's F. And you're given that there's some drag acting, small f actually. It's always in the direction that the boat's moving. Okay, what else are we given? We define this angle as beta. And that's kind of center. Mass of this guy is H. From the back. Okay, F is the center of mass, G. Okay. So what we want are the equations of motion for this system. All right. How do we get there?
Let's pick some frames.
Pick some frames. That's a good place to start. I'm going to say, hey, we probably have some kind of inertial frame. X, Y. And then I'm saying, well, let's have a body fixed guy, too. X, Y. And in picking those frames, we've kind of picked out an angle, maybe. Theta. Right, and then we can describe the center of mass location in the fixed frame as capital X, G, in the X direction. So we call this point G, center of mass of the boat. We have kind of, it's xg in the x direction, yg in the y direction from our fixed frame. And then some kind of rotation in that frame too. So that kind of picks out for us that that might be a good set of generalized coordinates to describe the system. Okay. So, this boat, however, can't just go this way. Right? That's a kind of good example of a non-holonomic system. Right? Can't act on this boat to make it go that way. Right? So, you also need to think about what forces we have. So there is actually some force, which in this case we'll just call N, that acts that way, that keeps the boat tracking sideways, in this case. And yes, a boat can actually go that way, but we're going to make some assumptions. Okay. So, we want to set this up. We're trying to find equations of motion. We have free body diagram, effectively, already. Let's think about the constraint in this case. That's good. That's kind of the part of this that's maybe new to us right now. What we're saying is, hey, this actually force N is acting in a way that forces the velocity of the boat, let's call it VG, to be in that small I direction. So the boat's velocity is always that way. Well, I think about, if I'm going to describe this velocity of g in this coordinate system using these generalized coordinates, well, I know that is also has to be that, right? All right. So what can we do with this? We're trying to get this into that normal kind of constraint form. Well, see, I only have velocity here. So actually what I can say also, hey, I don't have any component in this small j direction. I'm saying it's always in I, there's no component in j. So we're getting to a form where it's something equal to zero, maybe. So then I can write, and I want to be able to write that constraint in terms of my generalized coordinates, right? So I want to work from that one. What's j in this big frame? Small j. And that's zero. So you end up with right? Yes, I am. That constraint look like a form we can deal with? All right, so we just want to match this, right, to so for us, well, hey, A11. A13, hey, there's no theta that shows up, theta dot that shows up here. So A13 is zero. B1 is zero. So that sets up that Lagrange multiplier term on the right-hand side you're going to need for all these equations. All right, we are out of time. Actually, a little bit late, sorry. I'll post the rest of the solution in the notes. If you have questions about it, bring them on Thursday.